Most political scandals end in destruction. Affairs, pregnancies, betrayals. They're supposed to ruin campaigns, not revive them. But what if the biggest scandal of a politician's career wasn't a liability, but a calculated strategy? When Congressman Victor Langley's longtime mistress announces she's pregnant, he braces for ruin. But before he can spin the story, his wife, Eleanor, a brilliant strategist in pearls, does something no one expects. She doesn't cry. She doesn't file for divorce. Instead, she calls the mistress directly. And what begins as an explosive betrayal becomes the blueprint for one of the most twisted political comebacks in American history. Because the mistress doesn't just have the baby, she has the narrative. And the wife, she has the machinery to make it global. Together, they turn shame into currency, deceit into theatre, and a child into a power move that could secure them all a place in history. But alliances built on secrets don't last, especially when someone decides they want more than just power. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favourite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. Chapter 1, The Mistress, The Wife, and the lie that started it all. The first time Camille Ortega met Victor Langley, she was 25, broke, and two drinks past good judgment. He was 10 years older, 10 million richer, and as married as they come. She told herself it would be one night. But 3 years later, she was still waking up in silk sheets paid for by his campaign fund, and whispering goodbye before the press arrived. Camille knew what she was, a distraction, a weakness with legs and lips, but she also knew what she wasn't, stupid. She had kept every receipt, every message, every voice memo. She'd told herself it was self-preservation, but the truth was simpler. She didn't trust him. And now, with a positive pregnancy test trembling in her hand, she had all the leverage she'd ever need. Victor Langley was about to announce his run for Senate. He had the face, the rhetoric, and the right connections. What he didn't have was a plan for when his mistress got knocked up and threatened to go public, just as his exploratory committee was finalizing endorsements. She didn't call him. Not at first. She called her attorney, a disbarred genius who owed her favours. Then she made an appointment at a clinic, not to end it, but to confirm it, legally, medically, indisputably. When Victor finally got the message she left, three words carved in threat: "We need to talk." He was already behind. Their meeting happened in a Midtown hotel suite he often used for discreet encounters. It was cold, impersonal, exactly the kind of place where a man hides a mistake. "What the hell, Camille?" Victor's voice was already taut with rage, his face flushed. "Why wouldn't you just handle it?" "Because I'm done being handled," she said, calmly placing the test and the printed ultrasound on the glass coffee table. "And because I don't need you, but you need me to shut up. And I'm tired of pretending I don't exist." He stood in silence, breathing like a cornered animal. Camille leaned in. "I'm not asking for money. I'm asking for acknowledgement. I'm not your dirty little secret anymore, Victor." "You don't understand," he hissed. "You think you'll destroy me. What about the baby? You'll destroy it too. You want it born in a tabloid feeding frenzy?" Camille didn't blink. "That's your narrative, not mine." What neither of them expected was that someone else was already listening. Eleanor Langley, Victor's wife of 18 years, was sitting in a black Escalade across the street with her campaign advisor. She'd followed her husband, not out of jealousy, but strategy. When the door to the hotel suite opened again, Eleanor was already in the lobby. Victor looked like he'd seen a ghost. "Eleanor, what are you—" "Save it," she said, breezing past him into the suite. Camille, stunned into silence, watched the woman glide across the room like she owned it, because she did. "You must be Camille." Eleanor extended her hand with the same calm she used to handle hostile donors. "Would you mind if we sat down?" Victor opened his mouth. Eleanor shut it for him. "Not you. Wait outside. You've done enough." Camille, shocked, slowly sat. Eleanor didn't touch the test or the ultrasound. She didn't look angry. She looked focused. "Do you want to ruin him?" she asked quietly. Camille hesitated. "I want to be acknowledged." "Fair. But that won't get you what you deserve. If you go public, you're a homewrecker, a footnote. You'll get dragged and discarded." Camille folded her arms. "So, what's your angle? I want to make a deal." Victor's voice broke through the door. "Eleanor, stop! Shut up," she said without turning. Then to Camille, "We turn this into a scandal, but we control it. We write the story." Camille stared. "You're his wife. And I know him better than you ever will. I know how this ends, unless we decide to end it differently." And just like that, the alliance was born. The mistress and the wife. No longer enemies. Not yet friends. But something far more dangerous. Partners. What followed in the next 72 hours was pure political theatre. Eleanor summoned a PR specialist, crisis manager, and an old friend from Harvard who owed her favours at a media conglomerate. Camille leaked a private voicemail. Not the worst one, just enough to stir speculation. Eleanor went silent on social media for precisely 17 hours. Then came the leaked statement, crafted by Eleanor, but signed by Camille. "I never intended to hurt anyone. I only wanted the truth to matter." The internet devoured it. News outlets exploded with headlines. By the end of the week, Victor Langley was trending globally, and not as a scandal, but as a man weathering one. His numbers didn't fall, they rose. Privately, Victor seethed. He had lost control of his life, and two women were orchestrating every moment of it. But for Eleanor and Camille, this wasn't about revenge anymore. It was about power. And they had only just begun. Chapter 2. Power, Profit, and the Performance of Forgiveness. In politics, forgiveness isn't a virtue. It's a weapon. And Eleanor Langley knew exactly how to wield it. The day after the scandal broke, Eleanor emerged before the cameras in a cream silk blouse, pearls strung like armour across her collarbone. No tears, no weakness, just precision. "My husband made a mistake," she said, voice unwavering. "But that mistake does not define him, or our family. We've chosen to face this together, with honesty, with humility, and with strength." Behind her stood Victor, humbled and silent. Camille wasn't on stage, but she was there, seated in the third row in a muted grey dress, playing the role of the remorseful other woman with silent elegance. The camera caught her glancing down, lips trembling, just enough. The press fell for it, hard, op-eds poured in. The politics of redemption, how the Langleys redefined modern marriage. Mistress turned martyr, and the money followed. Donors who had once threatened to back out suddenly found themselves intrigued by the couple's courage. Women's groups, some sceptical, others manipulated, split down the middle. The scandal wasn't killing Victor's Senate hopes. It was fueling them, all because Eleanor and Camille had made it a story about agency. Behind the scenes, Eleanor was meticulous. She instructed Camille to go quiet. No interviews. No tweets. Instead, she crafted a fake private journal, leaked through a blogger she'd once helped avoid a lawsuit. "I never asked to fall in love with a married man. I told myself it was temporary. But the way he looked at me, like I mattered, that was a drug. People devoured it." Suddenly, Camille wasn't a villain. She was a wounded woman searching for love. Even the pregnancy became a talking point. Not a scandal, but a life created from chaos. Eleanor's spin was brutal and brilliant. "A child is never a mistake. Our choices may be, but not life itself." Meanwhile, Victor was miserable. "You've turned my affair into performance art," he hissed one night behind closed doors. "No," Eleanor replied, her voice flat. "I turned your self-destruction into political capital. You're welcome." Victor didn't respond. He knew he couldn't. He'd been outmaneuvered, and he hated it. But not as much as he hated how effective it all was. Then came the turning point. A well-known Republican strategist approached Eleanor during a donor dinner. "You've got something special here," he said, swirling his bourbon. "You ever think of running for office yourself?" Eleanor laughed politely, but something flickered in her eyes. The idea lodged there, unshakable. Why should he be the face of this movement when she had done all the work? Why should she remain the puppet master when she could be the candidate? Later that night, she brought it up with Camille. "What if we pivot?" she asked, pouring them both wine in the townhouse they now met in weekly. "What if this becomes your story and my campaign?" Camille blinked. "You want to make me a surrogate?" "No," Eleanor said. "I want to make you a symbol. You'll write a memoir, a real one this time. We'll call it The Other Woman or something sharp. I'll endorse it. You'll tour. I'll announce my campaign halfway through your book launch." Camille laughed. "You're insane." "No," Eleanor smiled. "I'm inevitable." Camille hesitated. "What about Victor?" Eleanor shrugged. "He'll be on stage. But off stage, he's finished." At first, Camille didn't say yes, but she didn't say no either, and that was enough for Eleanor to start planning. 2 weeks later, Camille had a ghostwriter, a book deal, and a stylist. Eleanor hired a photographer to do a spread. Camille, glowing with pregnancy, draped in neutrals, seated on a window bench with her hands on her stomach. The headline was outrageous. "The Mistress Who Forgave Herself." The photo went viral. People argued, loudly, but no one looked away. That's when Victor snapped. He stormed into Eleanor's bedroom, separate now, like roommates on a lease, and threw a copy of the magazine on the floor. "This is what you've turned us into, a circus." "No, Victor," Eleanor said without lifting her gaze from her laptop. "I turned us into a legacy." He laughed, bitter. "You think you're the victim here?" "I think I'm the architect." Victor's jaw clenched. "You used her." "She used you," Eleanor said. "We all used each other. That's politics." But Victor wasn't finished. "If you think I'll let you run a campaign using my scandal, you're not in control anymore," she said, standing slowly. "You stopped being useful the minute people realized I was the better story." Silence fell. For the first time, Victor saw her clearly, not as a wife, not as a strategist, but as a rival, and he hated her for it. Across town, Camille stared at the newest draft of her memoir. The ghostwriter had done an excellent job weaving in vulnerability and shame and strength, but something nagged at her. The entire story was being written, but not by her. She had been used. She knew that. But she had used them too. Now, with her belly beginning to show, she wondered how much longer she could ride the line between victim and villain. A week later, she got her answer. The publisher requested a photo of the baby's sonogram for the final chapter. But when Camille looked at it again, something shifted. It wasn't a story anymore. It was a child. A person who would grow up with this narrative stitched into their identity. And for the first time, Camille felt fear. So she did something reckless. She called a journalist, someone Eleanor hadn't bought or buried, and she told her the truth. The real truth. That Eleanor had orchestrated the scandal. That the forgiveness arc was planned. That she had been coached on how to cry, when to post, what to say, and that nothing was real except the baby. The journalist listened, asked questions, and said one word: prove it. So Camille handed over the messages, the the outlines, the receipts, everything. The story broke 2 days later, headline, The Redemption Scam. Inside the stage scandal of the Langleys, the internet exploded again. But this time, Eleanor wasn't in control. Chapter 3. The Fallout, the Fight, and the Final Betrayal. When the article dropped, it didn't just go viral, it detonated. A baby, a betrayal, and a political theatre. The Langleys scandal was scripted. Mistress spills all. The forgiveness was faked. Exclusive. Emails reveal Eleanor Langley's role in manufacturing sympathy. For 48 hours, cable news turned into a courtroom. Talking heads dissected Eleanor's every word, frame by frame, tone by tone. Victor Langley became a ghost, the man at the centre of a scandal now irrelevant in his own collapse. But it was Eleanor who stood at the eye of the storm. She watched from the privacy of her home as anchors replayed her speeches. The same words that once elevated her now burned like rope around her career, and she didn't blink. Damage control, she muttered, dialing the crisis team. But this time, the team didn't answer. Her allies vanished overnight. Donors went silent. The PACs that once begged for her endorsement scrubbed her name from their sites. Even her lawyer issued a public statement. We are no longer affiliated with Ms. Langley's campaign. And Camille? She disappeared too. No phone calls, no replies. Just one final post to her followers. I was used, and I let myself be, but the child I'm carrying didn't consent to being a prop. That's where I draw the line. The comment section exploded with both praise and scepticism. Some called her brave, others called her a liar. But most agreed, Eleanor had orchestrated something monstrous. Victor's campaign was dead, and Eleanor's image, once pristine bulletproof, was now radioactive. Inside the Langley house, silence reigned. Victor barely looked at Eleanor anymore. He moved through rooms like a man evicted from his own life. You got what you wanted, he said one evening, staring into his bourbon. You wanted control. Now you've got nothing. Eleanor didn't reply, because she hadn't lost everything. Not yet. That night, she drove to Camille's apartment. There were no paparazzi, just rain, falling in slow sheets across the windshield. Camille answered in pyjamas, visibly pregnant now, eyes wary. You shouldn't be here, she said. I needed to see you. Eleanor replied. Camille stepped aside slowly, and Eleanor entered the apartment she had never seen in person. No makeup, no performance, no spin. Just two women, two mothers, in different ways. You leaked the files, Eleanor said flatly. Yes. Why? Camille hesitated. Because it stopped being about power and started being about the baby. Eleanor's jaw tensed. You knew what this was. You were in on it from the beginning. I was, but I didn't expect to care this much, and I didn't expect to become disposable. Eleanor's eyes flashed. You were never disposable. You were essential. We gave you a story, a platform. You gave me a script, Camille snapped. You decided who I was and who I'd be. Eleanor moved closer. Then why are you still playing the part? Camille swallowed. Eleanor continued, quieter now. You think the public cares about truth? They care about performance. And right now, you're just acting out a different narrative, one where you're the victim again. I am the victim, Camille said. Of both of you. Eleanor shook her head. No, you're not the victim. You're the wild card. And that's why I came. She pulled a folder from her coat and placed it on the table. Camille opened it. Inside was a contract, publishing rights, media royalties, NDA clauses, and a six-figure offer. You're offering me money? I'm offering you control, Eleanor said. Of the story, of how it ends. Camille stared at her. And what do you get? Silence. They stood there, two queens from opposite sides of the board. calculating their next moves. But Camille didn't reach for a pen. Instead, she walked over to the kitchen and poured herself a glass of water. "You know what's funny?" she said, turning. "You thought I'd sell out again." Eleanor blinked. Camille continued. "But this time, I already did the one thing you never expected. I told the truth. Not because I wanted to ruin you, but because I needed to live with myself." She held up the contract. "I'll keep this, but not for the money. I'll have my lawyer look it over. But I'm not signing anything until after the baby's born." Eleanor's voice lowered. "If this continues, the child becomes a tabloid headline forever." Camille's eyes narrowed. "That's not my fault. That's yours." Eleanor left without another word. Weeks passed. Victor Langley officially withdrew from the Senate race. A vague statement citing family healing was issued through a junior staffer. The media moved on, eventually. But the story left a permanent scar across the public imagination. Camille gave birth in March, a boy. She named him Caleb. She moved states, quietly, and raised him in a small town by the coast. No press, no interviews, just distance. Eleanor, meanwhile, vanished from politics, but not from power. 2 years later, she returned, not as a candidate, but as a strategist behind one of the most successful gubernatorial runs in her state's history. Her fingerprints were all over it, but her name never appeared. She had learned her lesson. She no longer needed the spotlight, just the blueprint. As for Camille, her memoir came out a year after the birth, titled Mother, Not Mistress. It was raw, unapologetic, and best-selling. She donated a portion of the proceeds to women's shelters. In interviews, she refused to discuss Victor. She rarely mentioned Eleanor. But one quote stood out. "I thought power came from being seen, but sometimes the most powerful thing a woman can do is walk away and take the truth with her." And so, in the end, the baby didn't destroy a career. He exposed one. And in doing so, he forced two women to decide what kind of power they really wanted. Not the kind they could fake, but the kind they could live with.